Visit our website at BostonBastardBrigade.com for recent news, reviews, podcast episodes, and videos featuring members of the B3 crew.
Become friends with us on MySpace at MySpace.com/BostonBastardBrigade, as well as on Facebook. You can even find our Twitter accounts on our official homepage.
And don't forget to check out our friends at the Electric Sisterhood at ESH.MOBI for another side of news and review, including their own glorious podcast show.
The following is a special Boston Bastard Brigade presentation.
Tell all my friends I'm not home. I'd rather go this alone. My mind been blown to pieces. My life an empty thesis.
Joining us on the Boston Bass Brigade are one of the most talented up-and-comers to appear on our music radar in recent years. Their recent album, Lessons from the Late Night, was number 5 on our list of top albums of 2010, and are currently finishing their U.S. tour with Sick of Sarah and Lucas Alberia here at Tiki the Bears. I am very happy to welcome to B3 the one, the only, Hunter Valentine.
Hey!
How are you ladies doing today?
We're good. We're a little tired. It's the last show of the tour, so, you know, it's to be expected, but we're still going to give it our all.
Your listeners can't tell, but Kiyomi has her sleeping bag and her pillow for a little nap.
Uh-huh.
It's so adorable. She's all bundled up. She looks like a cute little inchworm.
You catch sleep when you can get it.
Yeah. Hunter Valentine, I know you girls write a lot of songs about heartbreak, whether they're from the breaker side or the broken. Which of the two sides would you say best suits you personally?
I would say it changes, you know. But
depends on what day of the week it is.
Yeah.
Today is broken.
Aww.
Okay, though.
I'd have to say breaking.
Breaking?
Yeah, she is.
You're a heartbreaker?
I don't try to be.
It just happens.
It does. But I mean, I've had my heart broken. Don't get me wrong.
I'm on that train too. Don't worry.
Lately, when she walks in a room, you can just hear the hearts just cracking right now.
Yeah.
When and where do you feel Hunter Valentine first began in your minds?
Huh.
That's a good question.
I think for me, it began, I was the last to join the band, so Kiyomi and Laura played together. But for me, the Hunter Valentine began, although it wasn't called that at the time, was our day of our first show. We played in Toronto. It was like June, almost 7 years ago now. And we were a three-piece band very suddenly, and we've continued as a three-piece band. So that, to me, was the first day of Hunter Valentine. But that's my experience.
And it was a big gay party, too, just so you know.
But, so what was the band called before Hunter Valentine?
Dirty Linen.
Dirty Linen?
Dirty Linen, Dirty Remedy. Actually, we were Kiyomi for a little while.
What happens when you start off as a singer-songwriter? Yeah.
So then it becomes Kiyomi and friends and...
Yeah. Kiyomi and pals.
It was, yeah. Kiyomi and that drummer.
Now, I know it's just been 7 years. It hasn't been quite a long time yet, but how do you feel Hunter Valentine has evolved since recording that first EP with Ian Burton?
Well, you don't think 7 years is a long time?
Imagine you had,
I do. Longer than any relationship I've ever had.
Well, that's how long I've spent in college, and it flew by like a motherfucker.
Yeah. It's evolved in so many different ways. I mean, like, I don't feel like I could sing or play guitar back then, but there was like a little inkling of talent, and it's just been, we've had a lot of great supporters, And it's, you know, that's allowed it to blossom into what it is today. I mean, everything, the songwriting is a lot more developed. Mm-hmm. Laura hits her drums a lot harder. You know, there's like so many different changes. It's really hard to like.
The one thing I remember when we were doing lessons from a late night with Ian, it, when we went into the studio to do like, or actually we were doing the pre-production, he came in and he was like, oh my God, you guys are a lot better than you were, you know, what, 3 years ago when I did your first EP, 4 years ago. So he was like, okay, yeah, you guys are good now.
Yeah, if you weren't, there would be a big problem.
And I could kind of notice that you sing a lot more harder compared from Impatient Romantic mm-hmm. to Lessons from the Late Night. You see more balls to the wall in Lessons from the Late Night.
Yeah, right. I think our live show is always leaning more towards that. And we just needed to grow and learn as musicians in order to be able to produce that sound that we all sort of dreamed of, you know?
Right.
So now our skills match our dreams, our dream of that sound, and we're able to make it all happen.
Now, does it also help out with the songwriting? Has that evolved through time? Or
I think so.
Now, what motivates, like, your inspiration for your music? Like, where do you find the majority of your inspiration?
I think some people, in order to get something off their chest, they need to sit down and maybe have a conversation with somebody and get it off their chest that way. For me, it's songwriting. If something sticks with me and I can't really get it, I won't be able to get it out of my system until it's in song form. So
instead of like a familiar feeling, you write out in the song, and then every time you think of that, it's now in song form.
Totally, yeah.
Now, we talked a little bit about Impatient Romantic. One of my favorite tracks of yours, probably your most beautiful, is Judy. But it sounds very personal, and I'm curious if Judy was a real person.
Yeah, she's my mom.
Oh.
So it's sort of about being in the house when my parents were like splitting up, and I stayed. My sister was in college in another city, and I was the only one there with my mom, and we were like we were living in this like big house where the family had lived, you know, and so watching her sort of go through all of the motions of this divorce. And being the only one there for her to lean on. That's sort of what that song's about. Trying to be like her rock a bit, you know?
Way to open up a can of worms, man.
Still upset!
Because originally when I first heard it, I thought it was about a girl that had just broken up with her love. But now hearing that story about it being about your mom, it's like totally different now.
Yeah. Well, yeah, it was like my sort of gift to her to keep her strong, you know, give her strength.
And it's a wonderful track, and it's definitely one of the songs that I can picture people, you know, getting the lighters out and waving them in the air and sort.
Yeah. I think we only played it once live.
Actually, twice because of the arrangement being so piano and string based. We think, not very often. Although people do comment on it as the, like, when say, Kiyomi was asking about, does anybody want to hear a song? People say Judy. I'm like, what?
They're like, get a life.
You need to see a piano up here.
Mm-hmm. Now, you released Lessons from the Late Night back in May, but I recall that it took a long time for it to be released because you had it out when you did the two shows with the Clicks back in 2009, and then it was supposed to be out in February, and then it got pushed all the way back to May. So I'm just curious, what happened during that time?
Artwork.
Artwork, and, you know, it's like living the dream of signing a record deal. Things get pushed back, and, you know, shit happens.
Because I do have the original album, the way it originally looked, how the little London Calling type of one.
Yeah, we
do. That's worth about $3,000 now, I believe.
And that's why I'm putting it on eBay.
Yes.
Now, one of the things you did to promote yourselves, or promote Lessons from the Late Night, you went to New York City.
Yeah.
And you did 12 shows in 12 hours. Who came up with this crazy-ass idea?
Oh, yeah. That's our publicist.
Your publicist?
Yeah.
And how do you feel it worked out at the end?
I think it was, like, a really cool thing to do, you know, like just, you know, to be able to tell your kids, you know, one time I played 12 shows, and it's, you know, it's a whole different kind of musical goal, and it was a rush when we were doing it, and
it was a lot of fun.
At times, yeah, we were like, why are we doing this?
Was that a goal?
There wasn't really an answer, but it was fun, especially to do it in a city like New York.
We only got chased by the cops twice.
Oh.
Yeah. One was a park ranger.
One was a park ranger, sorry. And one was us in the subway. They had guns in the subway.
Oh, my. Oh.
We ran. It was like, go.
We must stop those lesbians from rocking out.
On this recent leg of the tour, we went to South by Southwest, and bands go there. And, you know, do you try and play as many showcases as possible? And I was talking to this one musician, and he's like, yeah, man, I think I got, like, 7 shows in the 3 days that I'm here. And I was like, whoa, we did 12.
In one day.
And see, what you don't know is that we played 12 shows in 12 hours, but the prep time for the very first show, which was on live television, the morning show, we had to load in at 2:30 in the morning. So that was horrible.
So I take it, as soon as this was done, you just went to bed and just went plop.
It was like a 24-hour marathon.
Yeah.
I take it you're never going to do something like that again.
I think I would do it again. I think it would
something else.
It would have to be like, a little bit of a different way. Maybe like 12 cruises in 12 months.
12 cruises.
That might be good.
Or you could do what fellow Toronto band Fucked Up did and do one show for 12 hours straight.
Oh, yeah.
Wow.
That's crazy. But they're crazy.
Oh, yeah. But they're very lovable, too.
Yeah, we came to MTV to do MTV Live in Canada, and, like, they had been there the week before and, like, set shit on fire, and, like, a motorcycle was, like, driven out into the dressing room. I don't know. Some
shit gets destroyed with Fucked Up.
I love it. They were like, it was so bad, but it was so awesome. Like, all the people that worked there are like... Gotta keep it exciting.
And it's funny because Damien is actually quite the nice guy in real life.
Yeah, he is. Yeah.
It's like a different persona when he's on stage than he is on.
Yeah, totally.
Yeah. Now you recently relocated the band to New York from its Toronto upbringings. What was the main reason behind that?
Inspiration, like, you know, putting ourselves in a different environment and new challenges. We're a band that's always trying to give ourselves new challenges and set high goals for ourselves. So that was like always a dream of ours to live there. So
it's like draw a chalk line, reach it, erase it, draw a new chalk line, erase it. Yeah.
Pretty soon you'll be in the middle of the ocean somewhere and on some
doing
oil.
12 shows.
12 shows on 12 cruises.
Yeah.
Now, do you feel like the music scene in Toronto had a little something to do with you leaving? Do you feel like it's kind of rising or dwindling? Or
no, I think it's great. Everything's, it's amazing there. It's just, personally, I grew up in Queen West in downtown Toronto, and I'd never moved in my entire life. I've traveled a lot, but never moved. So for me, it was like, you know, it ends up being like you live in a small town. So even though Toronto's a very big city, there's a lot of people there.
Right.
You're just like walking down the street being like, hey, you know, it's you gotta get outside the box, I feel.
Right. It's like, hey, I'm in a band, and then 1 out of 3 Canadians are in broken social scene, so it doesn't really help out.
Exactly.
I want to talk about your music video for Revenge, which I think is awesome. Not just because there's a naked girl killing a guy. In it, where did the idea for the video come from? Because when I was watching it, I couldn't help but think the woman was like the spirit of Nancy Splurge, the Sid Vicious's girlfriend that got brutally murdered.
That's a good take on it. Well, the song is about a girl... who's been raped and she's coming back to kill her rapist. And so that's what the video is pretty much that story.
So you see that guy, the rapist, in like every scene, and she sees him in every guy.
So she seeks revenge. And worked out pretty well, I guess.
Because when I had heard the song at first, I was expecting it to be more like a fun-filled music video of sorts. Like you go,
oh, really? No.
I was expecting like you stealing panties from every ex that crushed your heart and like spelling out your band name on like some billboard with the panties.
That's okay. You should direct videos.
Well, I am. Well, I did go to college to be a filmmaker, so yeah. You've been friends with Lucas Severia of the Clicks for a long time. When did you first meet, and how did you know that you girls had a good click with,
so to speak,
yes, with the man known as Lucas?
Well, we used to see him in that small town that we used to live in all the time. I don't know, he was in the queer community and, you know, always playing music. I think that he invited us to open for him on his first CD release party for the first Clicks album.
Yeah, and
is that the first one or Snake House?
The first one.
The first.
But also, like, in, you know, Lucas, it's interesting to see Lucas in a full circle now doing promoting this acoustic album. But, you know, I knew of him and I knew musicians that had played with him, like a cellist that played with him. And he started with a really sort of great acoustic project and then went toward the band, towards the band, and that's, as Kiyomi said, we played, I think we opened for him on that CD release.
Actually, the first time that I got connected with him first, I think, is because I was promoting shows, and somebody recommended his band, and I booked the Clicks as a show that I was promoting.
Oh, cool.
So that was the first time that and then I think from there we started playing together and whatever.
And I've heard some interesting stories with you girls and Lucas. I think there was one that he once told about getting one of you drunk and having you wear high heels and underwear walking around.
Oh, that's me. That's me.
Is that the wildest story?
I don't think I was drunk. That's the only other thing. Maybe I was, but we were doing like a burlesque show. It was we were just playing like one song, and he was also doing one song,
right.
And it was mostly behind the scenes, right? You have like 2 weeks every night, or you know, 4 nights of the week, and there's a lot of time to kill.
Right.
So I ended up in one of the burlesque outfits. They put some tassels on me, and I took off all my clothes and threw some high heels on, and I think I gave him a dance.
Oh.
It's not really that out of the ordinary for her.
It's kind of normal for me.
Okay, so in that case, what's the wildest thing that happened to you on tour? Or at a show, or...
There are so many things.
It's been 7 years. Oh, hey, Lucas. Oh, we're just talking about you.
I know. I know what you
love. Well, we were trying to think of some wild stories to tell.
I like the one where Lucas flushed Kiyomi's feet down the toilet.
What?
And Van Keys.
Austin.
The Van Keys.
Bastard.
You know, Austin.
Yeah.
That was a lovely
That was fun. There's lots of great.
We've been
stories.
Pulled over by the police. Had our van searched with dogs.
That was in Houston.
We've gotten to the border and been held there
for 4 hours
and turned away when we had like a university show with like 1,000 people waiting. There's lots of stories.
Oh my god. I never knew it was so rough for a band like that.
The time we couldn't find Adrian, and then we found her at the strip club at 7 in the morning.
Passed out in some girl's crop.
Clever.
That was a good one.
Well, when you need to see tits, I guess there's... you need to see tits.
Right. That's right. That's
right. Nothing wrong with that.
On top of your music videos, on your YouTube, one of the things that I think is really cool that you do is the cocktail sessions.
Yeah, buddy. I have to say though, it's my cooking show that I do.
So I follow you on it.
Yeah.
You're one of my two subscribers.
Yes. All right.
Now, when did you say, hey, let's do a cooking and drinking show?
Oh, that's just hers.
I just, you know, honestly, I was bored and I started doing cooking videos. And then Adrian had said, I really want to be on your show.
I did. I was like, I want to make a cameo.
And she said, let's do a cocktail season. You know, let's do, we came up with the idea to do four different cocktails Over the course of seasons, and we invited all our friends over.
Were these like new creations, or were they just like?
No, I mean they're all Adrian's. Yeah, classic cocktails.
Oh. But as you know, because you've seen the video, it's like by the fourth season, where everyone's a little bit
intoxicated. Because okay. I mean, you know, she had to make one for the show, and then she had to make like 8 or 10 for everybody else. You know, so we would sit there and drink one. And then go back and do the next. You know what I mean?
It's kind of reminiscent. There's this.
And they were like not like they are strong cocktails.
Yeah.
You know.
It's there's this web show called Tiki Bar, which kind of reminds me of that setup. They make a drink, and then like 2 minutes into the show, everyone's so shit faced.
Yeah.
But it's cool. Do you are you thinking about doing more in the near future or?
I just posted one a month ago that I had done at Kiyomi's house when my mom was in town over Christmas. Or whatever,
she didn't burn a house down.
We wanted to do one with Sikasera, with the Misha, the lead singer, and the guitar player Jesse. But
okay.
It didn't work out, so we might try to do that in Canada.
Oh, all right. Well, yeah. There's a bar out there too, so.
Well, not cocktails. I think we're gonna make soup or something. Like
oh.
That. Again, I know I did a soup episode, but Misha makes supposedly the best soups ever, so.
Besides doing all this, besides the music, besides the cooking show, you recently guest starred on the web show Girl Scene.
Yes.
Now, where did that come about? Did they ask you? Did you ask them? Or?
I had seen it, the show, and I had asked these guys, would you be interested if I like reached out to them? And I reached out and just sort of said, you know, your music on the show needs a little bit of Hunter Valentine. And eventually they came to a show that we had in Louisville, Kentucky.
Yeah.
And by the sort of the crew meeting us, they asked us, they sort of, you know, said, hey, would you guys be interested in being in the show? Because, you know, Tucky has a bunch of ideas.
Yeah.
And so we said, we'll write it out, we'll read it, and if we like it, we'll do it. And so we did, and we went down, and then just, that's kind of how it happened. So.
And you got to kick off one of the cast members of the show off the stage.
Yes, I did. Yeah, Elliot.
Yeah, you got to kick off Elliot. How was that for you? Because you were mentioning before that you've never done anything like that to...
No, I'm like the nicest person ever. I mean, in terms of like cuddling. Like, I cuddle Adrienne before she goes to sleep every night just because, you know, she misses her mom. And
do you read her bedtime story too?
That's cute. Yeah, I usually read her a bedtime story.
True.
No, but I would probably never physically harm anybody, but the idea of doing it just for show, why the hell not, right?
And how did Elliot take it at the end? The person playing Elliot.
Jack loved it. He thought it was amazing.
He actually thought there should have been more of that scene in the editing.
You know, I kind of agree in that. I think it would have been funny if you actually took him and, like, literally flung him halfway across.
You know, as small as he looks, he's actually probably, like, stronger than you think. You know what I mean?
Really?
But I have to say, in episode 5, which we all saw in, Kiyomi has some pretty good scenes going on in that you have to stay tuned for.
Define pretty good scenes.
Can't tell you.
Spoiler.
That
sucks. When you're not touring or recording, I'm not sure you still do this or not, but one of the things you do to help out kids is act as a staff band for Buck's Rock Performing and Creative Arts Camp in Connecticut. Now, first off, do you still do that, or...?
No, we only did it... Well, as a band, we only did it once. Adrienne did it when she was younger. That's kind of how we were connected to it.
Okay.
She was sort of like, you know, there's this really great opportunity to go and live rent-free and make money. Not much, but make money, but have a rehearsal space and play shows and, you know, do that kind of thing.
So I know that you would teach the kids all about rock and roll and such, but in return, what would the kids teach you?
Well, I fed them. So this is more a question for Adrienne and Kiyomi.
I was a guidance counselor for 16-year-old girls. So they taught me patience. How to break up fights in mud.
After you toss in a few dollars.
Make sure they don't double up on their meds. How to not lose my mind.
All the things you do with me.
Yeah. Just like being Lucas Silvera's guidance counselor.
Fun.
Except the mud was on purpose between me and him. We did it because we wanted to.
Mud wrestling! Woo!
I seriously didn't know what to do. It started raining and it was like all muddy and I was like, I can't even look at this situation. This is like really crazy. Anyway.
It's like, I should be happy, but why?
I know.
But I think, I mean, I love working with kids. And on one of the stops on our day of 12 shows in 12 hours, we went to Harvey Milk School and played a little show there and did a little Q&A. And, like, having done a whole bunch of press that day as well, we sat there in the school, in this high school kid who's participating there asked us some, like, really, really great questions and had really done her research. And so I don't know, I think we all have a lot to learn from kids. Like I thought, our time at that school was one of the highlights of the day for me.
Yeah, I was just kidding. Like we learned a lot, and actually the kids kept us on our toes because it's like an arts camp, you know, and there's a lot of amazing young people writing songs and like building tables and like doing all this crazy stuff, and it really like kept us on our toes because we went out there to be creative. And you know, anytime at the end of the day when we would get to our little rehearsal space in the woods, we would have seen like all of these amazing things all day, and you know, it would inspire us to be pretty creative.
That's great.
Yeah.
Well, what's the song? I Believe the Children Are the Future. And
yeah.
that song. Well, I can't even remember the
best. A lot of the songs that ended up on The Impatient Romantic were sort of workshopped and hashed out, started, finished in that environment in Connecticut.
Awesome. I know you've done some collaborative work, especially with Lucas over there, but besides Lucas, who would be the ultimate person that you would like to collaborate on a song with?
For me, it would be Tim Armstrong from Rancid.
Ooh.
Or Brody Nell.
Oh, Josh Homme's wife.
Yeah, she used to be married to Tim Armstrong, though.
I know.
Yeah.
Do you have one?
To collaborate with?
And what could you, like, picture doing with them when you're collaborating with them?
I would want to, like, write with the entire band of Muse.
Ooh.
And I hear that they're crazy. They're crazy.
Yeah.
Unfortunately, I don't remember their names, but I think it's Mike is the lead singer.
I think so.
Michael or something. And he's supposedly pretty out there, and I think it would be really amazing to work with him.
So he's like a rock star version of Mozart in the Amadeus movie.
In a way, yeah, absolutely. Like they said that there's this. We were listening to sort of history about him, and that he used to faint a lot or. He used to have dehydration because he drank too much. And not because he was like, you know, just they would drink way too much. And, you know, so they're like, slow down, buddy.
When we were in, I guess, like, San Diego on this tour, we were heading up the coast, and Kiyomi, like, I don't know how your actions speak for you, but Twittered to Linda Perry and said, hey, Linda Perry, I think you should come out to our show. And she replied. I think she'd be a pretty amazing person to work with, too.
I can see that.
No. She didn't make our show.
Oh. But imagine if she did. You could have given her a big hug.
She replied, that's all a good start.
Yeah. The next step would probably be, hey,
we're
working.
I think Pink actually would. I mean, I realize Linda Perry and Pink, whatever, but I think Pink would probably be interesting to work with. She's
especially,
pretty poppy, but I mean, like, maybe we'd... You know.
Well, current Pink. Like, if it was Pink before Pink became, you know, her crazy self. I can't.
I don't know. I kind of like crazy Pink.
Me too. I've always preferred a woman with a little bit of a crazy side to it.
Yeah.
Especially
don't
in music.
Get me started.
What is the next step for Hunter Valentine? I know Europe is on your tour list, but what do you see doing after conquering the fan base over there?
Trying to work on Australia right now and, you know, slowly getting closer to that goal. So, fingers crossed.
Yeah, Australia is a personal goal for me. And
you think you'd be able to...
A band goal as well.
You think you'd be able to handle the flight?
Yeah, I've done it.
You have?
Yeah.
The 20 hours of...
I did a flight. It was a bit cheaper, so it was 24 hours. Plus, I think in total there was 8 hours of layover, so it was like a 30-something journey.
Holy shit!
Yeah.
I've done it too, because Bali's even further.
So, it's...
Wow. I thought my flight to Japan was long.
That's only, 13 hours. Yeah, that's a stopover, actually. And then you do another, 9 or something.
Well, my stopover, unfortunately, was at New Jersey, so it was, 12 and a half hours straight from there.
Yeah.
So, what would you say is the ultimate message that Hunter Valentine conveys in your music?
I don't think there's one message. I think that's too...
Too vague?
Vague. We've been in this band for 7 years. The message is always evolving and changing because the band is who we are. And it's do you have an overall message for you as a person? One message?
For me personally, I think it's to prove people wrong. Because growing up autistic, it was really difficult for me to express myself, and people would look at me really differently. They didn't expect much out of me, and then even the doctors would say, don't expect them to graduate middle school, don't expect them to graduate high school, don't expect them to graduate college, and every fucking time I proved them wrong.
So that's
been my goal, and that I met great people like you girls and Lucas, and I'm really proud of how far I've come along since being two and being diagnosed first and to right here. I still have things I need to work on, but...
Yeah, but that's also changing once you conquer these things, right?
Right.
So I guess my point is that things are always shifting and changing and evolving for us, so, a big message that we have is, because we have worked with kids in the past, is to... whenever we play a show or, are out there promoting our band, we always encourage women and girls to pick up an instrument and play instead of, watching all the time.
Right. Because there really aren't, I don't want to say there aren't a lot of female-led bands, because there are, but there are not, a lot of them that are, pushed out there.
Yeah.
Besides you, the only two other bands I can think of are, the Donnas and Vivian Girls.
Yeah.
We're lucky to be a part of a growing community of all-female bands, though. Girl and Coma from San Antonio, we really love the chance to play with them, and they work with a similar ethic, and they tour very constantly. We got the opportunity to meet some great girls from Vanity Theft for the first leg of our tour. And now I'm Sick of Sarah, so it feels like something's happening, we're sort of in this strange time where all of a sudden there are other girls that have been around for 4 or 5 or 6 years and are touring it with the same commitment that we are, and that's very exciting, I think, for us to see this change happen, because you're right, it's very few and far between, and then now there's some interesting, I think, movement happening.
It's true, and with the touring thing, it's touring was part of just another facet of the boys club, because you would see all these within the punk rock community or whatever, bands taking out their friends and they're all dudes, right? And now we have the ability and the power to help the next female band out. I mean, we're not always going to be touring with female rock bands, but the idea that we can actually control that a little bit and give somebody else a shot, because we weren't really given that shot initially, it's really an awesome thing.
And it's good that they're finally pushing away the stereotype of women can't rock. I know there've been the Runaways, there were the Go-Go's, all these bands from Japan with Stronger Knife and coming to America, but I wouldn't say they didn't get the respect, because they did get a lot of respect, but they really weren't pushed out there as much as their male counterpart, despite the fact that they were doing it far better than them.
It's true, and also it's funny because a couple of those bands that you name, that's one decade, another decade, what the fuck happened to all the female bands in between those decades, There can't be one notable female rock band every 10 years.
Yeah. Right.
There has to be, like, you know, oh, this band, this band, this band, all the time, just the same way that there are with dude bands.
Right, like, there needs to be at least 100. Yeah. You need something to counter it.
No, and you don't always want to just be like, you know, we're a band, we're not always a female rock band. Like,
right, and it's funny because you never hear someone go, okay, here, I've got this rock band here, and they're all guys.
Yeah.
Yeah. Three-piece guys, can you believe it?
Yeah.
So even though it's an amazing thing, you kind of like want it to fit into a norm, being a normative thing in any way, you know, like,
right,
not it being this like weird, like gimmicky, like, thing.
Condescending.
Yeah.
Correct.
Because it's like saying like, oh, you have a vagina and you can play an instrument.
Ooh.
Wow.
Do you know how many times on this tour I've heard the, and it's, you know, and I'm not just saying this because, well, you're a girl, but you guys are really, really good. And I'm not saying it because you're a girl, though. I'm like, okay, then why did you say that? Why did you just say that you're a good band?
You don't need to say that. It's
say you're a good band.
It's like they're surprised. It's really fucking weird.
And the first time I ever met you down in the Middle East, I think I'm the guilty of that, too, because I said, I had a couple of drinks in me, but I was like, you're the first all-girl band outside of Japan that, like, blew my fucking mind away, or something like that.
But see, that's okay, I think. I mean, it's categorized, but, I mean, I think it's the, hey, I'm surprised that you're a girl and you can play. Like, that's kind of like...
Yeah.
That's a little bit insulting, even though they're trying to be, you know, they're trying to be nice. And it's like, well, you know, I think every guy band that I see now, I'm going to say, wow, you guys are pretty damn good for a guy. You know? Like, being a guy, you guys are pretty good.
Okay.
That's what I say to Lucas all the time.
Yeah, you know, you're pretty good for a tranny.
That's what I get all the time.
Now, the last question I do, I started asking this from... to bands, starting with the Blood Red Shoes, and I did this with a couple other groups. It's a little bit of a game, or something that I think you might have done in your past. It's called Three Album Island. And basically, it's the question of, if you were stuck on a deserted island, which three albums would you have on you to keep you sane, you know, until you get rescued, and why?
Okay. Sloan, One Chord to Another. Muse. That's a hard one. I want to say, what's the last, what was it called? The last
one? The Resistance?
The Resistance. And I need a little something old in there, so give me a second. Let's say, maybe I'd pick Abbey Road by the Beatles.
Now, what about those three albums would, like, help keep you sane?
Well, the Sloan is really poppy and happy and fun, and then the Muse is very, like, so that would be when I was really depressed, and then the Muse is when I need to, like, chill out and just get in my head, and then the Beatles, I think, would be if I found any funny business on the island, any substance, I'd be like, oh yeah, let's just pop on that Abbey Road. All
right,
Kelly? That would be, the Distillers, Coral Fang. Aha, Heartbreak, or Aha, Shake Heartbreak, Kings of Leon.
Ooh.
And, Edith Piaf, Greatest Hits.
Edith Piaf, Greatest Hits?
Yeah. Keep it romantic with myself.
That's good shit, man.
I probably would pick, so I have a classical background, so I'm gonna, like, nerd it up here, but probably my favorite... I'd try and pick a favorite classical piece, which is probably Brahms' German Requiem.
Ooh.
Really love that. And then I might pick, I don't know, if I had only three, then I'd probably go with a jazz album for In Between, like maybe Birth of the Cool by Miles Davis for something in between. And then an album, one of the first albums I ever started playing along to as a kid, electric bass, was the Beatles' White Album. So those would probably be my three.
Those are some great choices. And it lets listeners know what artists that inspire you in some way, and not only that, but when times are tough, these are like the albums that would help keep you sane and quite possibly might help others, you know, keep their sanity. So, Hunter Valentine, Kill Me, Adrian, Laura, thank you so much for joining us on the Boston Bastard Brigade. It was a real pleasure to finally be able to sit down and interview you girls.
Yeah, thank you.
And their album is Lessons from the Late Night. It's in stores now. And look on huntervalentine.com to check out their upcoming tour dates in Europe and hopefully Australia as well.
Canada as well.
Oh, Canada too.
Canada in May, so.
Yeah, and we'll be back through the States in the summer.
Excellent.
Yeah, we had a few dates booked already, so.
Okay.
Actually, we're coming through Boston, I believe.
Ooh.
So, or Boston.
Awesome.
So check it out. I can't tell you where it is because I don't remember.
Let's see, Paradise, House of Blues.
You know, it's actually like a school,
It's a camp, actually.
Oh.
I believe.
Something. Yeah.
Anyway, just check our MySpace or Facebook or website.
Twitter, too.
Twitter.
Add me on Facebook. I'm trying to beat everybody.
Okay.
Okay.
I'll be sure to do that. All right. And again, thank you so much for joining us here.